You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome, everybody, to this week's edition of Behind the Braves, the official podcast of the Atlanta Braves. I'm Ricky Mast, Atlanta Braves Digital Media Content Manager. And this week, we're going to do something a little different. We're going to do a best of edition of Behind the Braves. And we're going to take a look back at what I think is still one of our most interesting and compelling interviews we've done. We've been doing this show, of course, for over 3 years and over 100 episodes. And while it's hard to choose one singular favorite, this one is certainly, I would say, in the conversation for one of my favorites, as well as my co-host, Director of Braves Alumni Relations, Greg McMichael. Early on in Behind the Braves, we sat down with Braves legend Rico Carty, and we figured it's been a while now. Again, this episode came out, I believe, in November of 2018, that maybe this would be a good time to revisit this. And as you're going to hear, if you didn't hear the episode back then, and you're going to hear it now for the first time, what a story he has to tell. And I think this man, if he hasn't already taken up a second career as a voiceover artist, then I think he should, because you're going to hear he has got quite a set of pipes on him. So we hope you're all having a great holiday season and that you're enjoying this time with your loved ones, and we look forward to seeing you soon. But in the meantime, here's a look back at our interview with Rico Carty.
Well, Rico, welcome to the Alumni Lounge here at SunTrust Park and Behind the Braves. That's the name of our podcast, and we appreciate you being here today. You know, yesterday we got to spend a little time together with your family. We had Los Bravos and Alumni Sunday, so we got you out there, introduced you to the fans again. You have a lot of fans here in Atlanta, and you're able to do the chop. So how was that for you?
That was great. It's great coming back to Atlanta. I think I haven't been here since 25 years.
Wow.
Yeah. I was looking forward that the Braves, you know, because was going to bring me back through those years that I wasn't here, because it's surprising. I was one of the most popular ball player with the fans. Not with the ball players. I had problem with seven ball players.
Seven?
You got seven of them. Because, right. You know, I'm the type of fellow, I couldn't take too many pushes. But when the time goes by, you start learning is the truth from the American people. Mm. It's one thing I learned from you all. You step on somebody and you say, forgive, I'm sorry. I used to say to myself, why? I still want to step on him. He said, he's sorry. And throughout the times, I start learning that. And I said, these is humble people. Mm. It's not the way we, the Latin players, you know, we come to a different country. It's really tough because in our country, we all live together. And if you're a ball player, you can do so many things and people will always put you way up. We come from different families, very poor families. And the majority of the ball players in the Dominican Republic really come from really down. Okay? Mm. And when they get a few dollars, they think they got God in their hands. With my father and my mother was a midwife, my father was a boss under the tracks of the sugarcane company. And I tell you one day, I never passed hunger one day. Hmm. And that is the truth. I learned from them to don't crave at the dollars, at the money. When they signed me, the Milwaukee Braves signed me, it was John Mullen and Ted McGraw. St. Louis gave me a blank contract in 1959 that I could put any amount of money that I want in that contract. The owner of the teams in the Dominican Republic, and Toon said, no, wait a minute. He belongs to the Strangers in San Pedro, and we want him to sign with the Milwaukee Braves because John Mullen and him was very good friend. The scout that gave me the contract in blank said he can play for the Strangers in San Pedro and plays for St. Louis Cardinals. He told them no. And I didn't know anything about money because I wasn't craving at the money. I wanted to play baseball. Okay? I accept $2,000 at that time. That's what they give me.
Wow.
The Milwaukee Braves. And I give it to my mother. But I'm just showing you all what we go through when we come from the United States, from the Dominican Republic, Latin players, to the United States. The color bearer, I could have never understand that.
Mm.
We don't live like that in our country. Wherever you go, it's the truth. It's prejudice everywhere, little or big. But in our country, it's the money, your status, the way your family is positioned. You can be black at your shoes, and if your father and your mother, your family is in good status, you can do anything you want in the Latin countries. And when we come here to the United States, that we can sit down in a restaurant to eat, get on a bus, and you got to go in the back part of the bus. You go to a restroom, and you cannot. It's white, black. I said, what is this? Were you going to take your bowels? You know what you said it in English? And you cannot go into where you want to go and do your, you know.
Go to the restroom.
Yeah,
the
restroom, you know.
It's crazy.
It was crazy, really.
Well, we just had 25 years from the anniversary of Martin Luther King's assassination. 50. Yeah. Mm-hmm. 50 years. And we were interviewing some of the players that were here during that time. Joe Torre came back, was here, and obviously Hank.
I played with Joe Torre, Hank Aaron.
Right.
Clete Boyer. Baba Stramonte, Mac Jones, Tony Cunningham, Ron Reed, Pat Jarvis. Now, that was about there. Pat Jarvis and Tony Cunningham. When they're pitching, you got pitchers up there. Phil Negro. Phil Negro was the type of pitcher. He was a knuckleball pitcher. He was very good. When he is his day, you're not going to hit him that easy. And that one time, I say that the Braves in those days, with Hank Aaron, Felipe, and Felipe Millan, Rico Carty, and Orlando Cepeda, then goes down Clete Boyer, it was the best hitting ball club in baseball.
Yeah, you guys had some great.
I'll tell you one thing, and this is the truth. We was playing against the Giants here one night, and it was raining, and the Giants was beating us 12-1 in the bottom of the eighth inning, and it's rain. We get back in the field, it's rain again. We end up beating the Giants 14-13.
Wow.
That's how good our ball club was. But our defense was weak. We had Sonny Jackson in the shortstop, and he always said, Rick, what'd you say? He didn't feel a ball. But Paul Richard liked him. He bought him from Houston, too. And that's happened a lot. And Paul Richards was one of the smartest general managers in baseball. And that is the truth. Like I'll say, look, to me, because I hit behind a Hank Aaron, to me, Rico Carty, that's the best hitter I ever seen in baseball. In 1966, and the ending of May, Hank Aaron was hitting 138 or 158. The ending of May, I look at Hank and said, Hank, what are you doing? He says, man, what are you telling me? I say, are you going for his home runs? You know, and they're not going to give you any good pitches. So why don't you try to spread the ball around? and then goes for your homeroom. We came in the clubhouse that night and we sitting together because we was real good friends. And he said to me, he said, Rico, you look at me from tomorrow on. I'm going to split the ball around. And he just started doing that. Bam, bam, to all opposite field, all fields. When he was hitting about 290, 300, he said, Rico, now I'm going for the long ball. I'm going for the money drive. And that year, he ended up hitting 44 home runs, hitting about 320, 310, something like that, and driving 121 runs. Ain't no hitters can do that.
That's crazy.
You know?
Hey, well, let's tell our fans, just remind our fans just what kind of ball player you were. I want to read you some things, some of your awards, records that you've done over the years, and then and maybe comment on with us, just comment what's the most impressive to you and what you take the most pride in. So I just want to share this with everybody just as a reminder what kind of player Rico was. But he was an all-star. You're runner-up rookie of the year. 1964, you finished second to Roberto Clemente for the batting title. There were 8 seasons where you batted over 300. You're tied for first with Ralph Garr for the all-time batting average of 317 with Atlanta and Milwaukee combined. And then you're 6th overall with our franchise, including Boston. There were a bunch of guys back turn of the century that were that hit, but you were 6th overall. That's including Boston. Then you set a record for 31 consecutive games with a hit until 2011, where Dan Uggla ended up with 33, I think.
I believe it was 33.
33. And then today, you still have the record for the highest batting average for a season. That's 366. So those are pretty impressive records that you have. But out of all those, what means the most to you with those records?
Well, I'll tell you, 366 was great. In what I did that year, that Hank Aaron, Eddie Matthew, and all of them get mad with me because Orlando Cepeda was the 5th hitter. But at the time, I wasn't thinking that I was doing harm to nobody. I was doing a favor. And I told the Skip, I said, look, put Orlando 4th, put me 5th, 6th, 7th. I'm going to hit wherever you put me. I said, okay, put me 5th. So they keep telling Rico, hey, you never do anything like that in the big leagues. Hank Aaron, Carlin told me the same thing. Eddie Matthew, all of them. Rico, hey, you never done anything like that in the big leagues. I said, well, I'm going to do it because if you put me 8th, I'm going to hit. Wherever you put me, I'm going to hit. That's the confidence that I had in myself as a hitter. Hank Aaron got mad, and he was right. After I understand, you know, by the time was going by, I say, hey, I didn't do it because I wanted to harm Hank Aaron. I did it to help Orlando Cepeda. And after that, Orlando started hitting. And then he was happy because then you got Orlando 4th and me 5th. You got a picture of Hank Aaron. But the funny thing in that year, when we got to San Diego, Orlando was already hitting almost 300. He had almost 20-something home runs. Okay, he had about 80 runs by the day, and I said to Orlando, okay, you're on your way now. Give me my 4th spot back. You know what he told me? He told me no.
Yeah.
I said, what you mean no? You can't be that ungrateful. I have helped you, okay, and that's my spot. I went to the manager room in Harris. You know what Luman told me? I told you. So don't you come in here talking that stuff to me. I said, wait a minute. I'm the 4th hitter, not Orlando. And if you don't put me 4th hitter, I'm going to get out of the lineup. He said, well, if you do that, you'll never be in the lineup anymore because I'm the manager. I say, okay, Orlando, we're in San Diego. Okay. From San Diego, we went to 3 different cities. And every city we got to, I tell him, Orlando, tell him, man, you put me forward. He says, no. He said, when we get to Houston, I will give you your 4th spot. We got to Houston. I'm sitting down. I'm dressed. I look up. fourth and fifth, the manager didn't put no name up there. I said, okay. I went up. I put my name forward and put Orlando fifth. Lumont came out and said, who did that? I said, Mr. Lumont, with all respect, I did it because I'm the fourth hitter. He said, no. I'm the manager. And we all told you that you should never do that. And Orlando don't want to give you back the fourth spot. You got to wait now until we get to Atlanta. I said, Orlando, you know why I don't fish you right now before these people? Because you are my best friend. Mm. Or one of my best friends. But you, hey, I don't like you anymore. He said, what do you mean? And he hugged me, you know, and so forth, and said, hey, be quiet, man. You're still hitting over 400. So what are you fighting about? I said, because I help you, and now you should be nice enough not say, Rico, here's your fourth spot. Hmm. So everybody was laughing at me, and Hank told me, he said, you see what I told you? There it is. So we get to Atlanta. Okay, we came into Atlanta. I think that Mr. Lumont is going to put me forward again. He didn't. He leave fourth and fifth out. He was just spiting me to show me you cannot be that nice a guy. Mm. It was about wrong about 7:20. I said to myself, if he don't put me fourth spot, I'm not going to play. Exactly about it was 5 minutes before the game, I came off the field and come on in. Exactly the time, it was 2 minutes before the game start, there I was in the fourth spot. He told me, he tapped me on my shoulder, he said, I make a bet you'll never do that again. I said, I'll never do that to nobody.
That's great.
And that was one of those years that I think I had one bad month, I can't remember. It was June or July. I hit about 250, but it's there in the record. But you know something? The left-hand pitcher is the one that gave me trouble. Mm. And I didn't know because I was hitting so high all the time, I never think that the left-hand pitchers give me any trouble. So one day we was in L.A., and every time the eighth and ninth inning is coming up, Walter Erson would always bring a left-hand pitcher to pitch to me. I'd pop it up or hit into a double play. Mm. So that day, they was beating us 3-2. And, you know, I always a good hitter with men's on base. And that's why they about my third year, Presta Aston and Wasta Aston and all those managers say, pitch to Hank, don't pitch to Rico. Because in two strikes, I was dangerous. Mm. Nobody get me out in two strikes. But the left-hand pitchers, I was always take the third strike. And I didn't know why. Until one day, Walter said, what you talking about? You don't hit left-handed. I said, what you talking about? I don't hit left-handed. Then Paul Richard called me upstairs. Come on up. I want to talk to you. I said, now, what have I done? He said, come on, sit down. He says, look at your status. You hit in 120 against left-handers, and you have more 500 against right-handers. I said to him, I don't know why. Hmm. He said, why don't you go to have a bat? I say, I hit with a 36, 38.
Goodness gracious. Mm.
But
that's a telephone pole.
Yeah, but here's Richie Allen. He hit with a bat, with his bat. His weight bat is 45, 50 ounce bat. 44, 45, 50 ounce bat. I don't know how the hell he could have swing with that bat. So one day we was here playing against Phillies, okay? And we was real good friends. And here he is, you know, hitting bat in practice. I pick up his log. I said, oh, man, this feel good. He said, you want it? I said, yeah. I'm going to hit with it today. Young, strong, you know. First time up, I got into the home plate, and when I tried to pull that trigger, I couldn't. I said, what in the world is this? out here, I pick it up, you know. I swung it, good. But when that pig came to me, I couldn't pull the trigger.
This too.
I froze. I say, so I told the ump, I say, ump, I can't hit with this bat. He said, you're going to have to hit with it.
Oh, he wouldn't give you timeout?
No, he wouldn't. I took all three pitches right down the middle of the plate. I couldn't swing that bat. I said, so when I went in the dugout and I said to Orlando, I said, Orlando, how in the world you can swing that bat? I said, hey, my bat is 36, 38, and I couldn't pull the trigger with that one. He says, man, I swing it, and Richie Allen swing it, and Richie Allen swing it so easy. Wristy, you know, he just have that quick wrist with that bat.
That's crazy.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You mentioned earlier that you had a strong connection with the fans, either Cardi's Corner, the fan club, and the outfield,
left field.
In 1970, you were voted into the All-Star Game as a write-in candidate, a starting outfielder as a write-in candidate, which is incredible. I mean, did you, from the time you moved to Atlanta, did you always have that strong connection with the fan base here, or did it take time?
When I came from Milwaukee to Atlanta in 1964, because they always called me Smiley, I always had a smile on my face. The American people like that. They don't like a hot dog. And I would strike out, and I would smile. I made an error, and I would smile. They give me the name Smiley. Then I give myself the name Big Boy.
Okay.
And they would come out in the stand from left to right, Rico for president. I mean, it was something that unbelievable in Milwaukee. Rico for president. It would be the whole week that we play there, Rico for president. And the press will come up to me and say, Rico, hey, how do you like that? I say, I love it, but I cannot be president of the United States. I'm Dominican.
Right.
I cannot be. So it'll come out in the paper, Rico says he cannot be president of the United States. Then it come out, Rico for governor. So if it was today, they would explore that so much. But I think it's somewhere in there where you put up all those records.
Yeah.
It should be there. Mm. Then we came to Atlanta in 1966, and somehow my stamina with the fans came out, and they stayed out in left field, Rico, you know, and then they called me Smiley. Mm. But the funny thing is that when I was growing up, I didn't have nobody to give me a baseball. So when I get those baseball in left field, I used to throw up to the stand. Some of the ball players used to say, what he does, that's what he wants the fans them to love him. And that wasn't true. I was doing it from my heart. But you know something? The commissioner of baseball, they wrote the commissioner, and the commissioner was fined me $5 for each ball I throws in the stand. Wow. And you know what I was gaining? $8,000 a year. And in 1964, I hit 330. 1965, I hit 310. I dislocated my lower part of my back. I was out most of the time. 1966, I hit 326. Mario Lu Felipe, Lu Enrico Cardi, trio. Dominican players, one behind the other. In 1967, I dislocate my shoulder, run hand. I don't know when things are going to happen, that is going to happen. Who sent me to steal base? I was no great runner, but the pitcher didn't go into his, and I took off. He didn't even look at me. Run Hunt got the ball upstairs and his knee into my shoulder. He dislocated my shoulder. And I couldn't drive the ball towards the opposite field. I played throughout that year, and I know I should have got out of the lineup, but that was me. I keep pushing. I end up that year, I think, hitting 235 or 250, something like 255. Then I came down with tuberculosis in 1968. That was my hard blow. In the youth of my career, I came down with tuberculosis. But I said one thing to myself. I say, everybody says, why me? I didn't say that. I said to the Almighty God, I say, Lord, have mercy upon me and give me back my complete health. I don't want to blame nobody for my illness. Because like I said, you born, and in that white piece of paper is what you're going to do in life. Whatever you're going to do, it's right there written. The day that you're going to die, ain't nobody going to save you because it's already written down. And when I came back in 1969, I dislocated my shoulder 7 times. I was always in pain. And I end up hitting that year 342. And we clinched the Eastern Division ship by meeting a player. I had to because I wasn't going to throw out nobody. It was at shoot top. Tommy Hens with the base loaded. If that ball drop in, we would lose the game. But I made up my mind I had to cut that ball. It was 2 outs playing against Cincinnati. If that ball drop in, they was going to tie up with us. So when he hit that ball, I made up my mind I had to cut that ball. And I cut it on my shoe step. We won. And I came in, Bill Lucas said to me, Rico, he was part of the staff. He said, Rico, why you did that? I said, Bill, if that ball drop in, we're going to lose the ball game. Who was I going to throw? Because I couldn't throw. So I had to make the play. He says, man, you something else. You know? And this is... Then I came back in 1970, and that was my great year when I hit 366, 25 home runs, 101 run batted in. But you see, I was hitting behind a man like Hank Aaron. He don't leave no man's on base. And what he leave, that's what I pick up. See what I mean?
That's right.
And I'll tell you one thing, and this is the truth. Hank Aaron, I'd never seen Ted Williams. Played. I never seen Stan Musial, maybe at the end of his career. But I heard about Ted Williams, how great he was. A Ty Cobb, you name them. But to me, Hank Aaron would do whatever he wanted to do on the field as a hitter. And he was the type of person, he never talked. He go out, play his game, and go on home. The year of 1963 that I came up to the big leagues, Warren Spahn, Lou Burdette, Dale Crandall, Frank Torre, this was the superstar, Johnny Logan, and so forth. They used to come out and the fans were all over them. I said, hey, that's great. 2 years later, this is the word that Lou says. He said, gee, it turned around. Nobody's asking me for my autograph. And I said to myself, so I'm going to take a while and give these fans my autograph. And I used to do it every day we play here. I used to take out 2 hours and 3 hours. Sometime my family would come out and say, Red Scott, I say, hey, You go home. I'll stay here and sign. And that's why I think the fans adore me, because I was the only ball player to take out time and give them the autograph or throw a baseball to the stand. I think in one, I'm going to sue the commissioner for taking up my money.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Well, you're still doing that today, because I want to shift gears a little bit and talk about your foundation, because you're still giving back, just like that heart that you had to be able to give kids baseballs back when you played or sign autographs for the fans. You're still giving back today. So why don't you tell us a little bit about, tell us the name of your foundation and what you're doing down in Dominican.
It's Rico Cardi Foundation. Sometime I go out to give speech to the young kids and tell them things that really they have to hear. For instance, steroid and all that stuff. They don't have to use that to play baseball. I never lift weights in my life. And you can look at me, look at my hands. If I ever lift weights, I wouldn't like look like that. If I use steroids, greeny, I wouldn't look like where I look today. And you know, I'm 79 years old, and that lady that bring me to the ballpark, I told her, "You, I'm 70." She said, "What?
Yeah, you don't look it."
I said, "Hey, no. Oh, you look like you was 50 or 55. I said, "No, I'm 79 years old." He said, "God bless you. It's the way you take life, too. See, you can do everything in life, but you have to know how to do it. Things goes by so fast sometimes that you look at these kids of today and say, what are they doing like a hitter? I like Freeman as a hitter. He wait and react. That's the way you hit. But the majority of the hitters, they start swinging before the ball get there. So if the ball is around the strike zone, they will hit it. Once it's a slider, you can see that bat is way out there. There's not even seen the ball. And I'll tell you, Trout from
the Angels.
Angel, he is a good hitter.
Mm-hmm.
He wait. Okay? Albert Pujol, he's a great hitter, but sometimes he looks so. And it's the truth, he looked bad in the home plate. You know, after you got 10 years, eight, you have to know the strike zone. You shouldn't look like that. Sammy Sosa was the same way. But Albert Pujol is a lot better hitter than all of them of his experience. And that's why I criticize him and say he shouldn't look like that when, you know, in two strikes or nothing. Because he already known the strike zone. And that's your strike zone right there. What you going to go out there looking for? You know? But that's part of baseball. But the young players of today, I'll tell you one thing about Rico Cardi. I couldn't swing at the first pitch. And the pitchers knows it. And they come right down the middle of the plate. The manager, Orlando Cepeda, Hanky, and everybody will holler to me, Rico, swing at that pitch because you're not going to get anything else. I couldn't. When I'm in the hole, I'm a better hitter. Mm. In 2-0, I couldn't swing at a pitch. I got to get a strike to be a hitter. 3-0, I couldn't. Every hitter want to be on top of the pitcher.
Mm.
Every hitter, I could not. And that's why you see most of my fellow men around me say, Rico, you are the best right-hand hitter I've ever seen. Because nobody on earth in 2-0 will wait for strikes. And they knows it. And they'll come right down the middle of the plate. But I couldn't swing. If I swing, I'm an out.
Hmm.
Well, after I got that strike, now I'm a hitter. See? But the majority of the great hitters, they like to get on top of the pitcher 2-0, 3-0. That's when they hit the long ball. I couldn't.
Hmm.
And now, when I get to strike, I don't care who you're, Gibson, Marichal, Drysdale, Koufax, Tom Seaver, Nolan Ryan, you know, Jim Palmer, every one of them, I'll give them that strike. And I go from there on. And if this your day, I'm going to let you get me in two strike, because when I get two strike, you're in trouble, not me. Today, the majority of the hitters, when they get two strike, they're in trouble. And I was the other way around. When I get two strikes, that's when I was dangerous.
I didn't. Mm-hmm.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Who do you think was the best pitcher that you ever faced?
All of them.
All of them?
Oh, man. Gibson, Marichal, Drysdale, Gaylord Perry, Koufax, Maloney, Tom Seaver, Ferguson, Jenkins. They all in the big, Sutton, they all in the Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm.
But look who was getting me out any time he picked me. Jim O'Toole.
Really?
With Cincinnati. What's going on? I don't know. And every time I see a left-hand pitcher coming in,
yeah,
I said, where the hell is he going? And Hank Aaron and Orlando would laugh. He said, what do you mean? I said, hey, man, what the hell are you bringing in a left-hand pitcher here for? I know I was in trouble then, you know.
Was it change-ups? Was it sinkers? What was it?
I don't know, but I
whatever
was,
they threw?
Yeah, whatever they threw.
I slider, don't curve?
It right down the middle, and I couldn't hit it. I don't know what's wrong.
Good thing there weren't too many of those.
That's exactly right. It won't come from the right-hand side.
Oh, my goodness.
That's the name of the game. But what I'll say today, that the young players, they need people to talk to them and let them get in the mind that steroid is don't make them a hitter. And the long run, it's going to harm them throughout their life. They have a wife, they have kids, and when you can't do your job, somebody is going to do your job. And that is the truth. And steroid, it messed you up. The doctor says it, and it's the truth. And that's what I want, you know. For instance, I came back a week ago a week ago to bury my older son, Rico Jr. He was a ball player. He signed 3 times. I know he wasn't going to be anything great, because it was that time of these flashes, and he always won new spikes, new gloves. I say, hey, you don't do that. I'm your daddy. Okay, I'll get it for you. But I played with my gloves for 3 years, and every week you won a new spikes, every week you won a new gloves, you're not going to be no player. And the people used to say to me, why you say that? I'm telling you all the truth. He is a pretty boy, and that's all it is. And I would like to see the autopsy to see if he was using that. Because the way he died, see, he was playing that day, and I think they strike him out. He went back to the dugout, sit down, and just faint away. He never, and the big thing was it was on my birthday. The 1st of September, that was my present of my birthday, the death of my only son. But coming back to Rico Cardi Foundation, like I told you when you called me from the Dominican Republic to the Dominican Republic, I said, Greg, I need your help. You see, it had a few organizations that sent me clothes, spikes, gloves. They send me money. But it's the tongue is so poor, and all that is wrong us. They will bring prescription to you, so they'll buy medicine and so forth, and that's what I do. The little that I get, I give it to the people. You go right now to San Pedro de Macorís, and you can send anybody in there and ask, But Rico Cardi Foundation, know what they're going to tell you? What I'm telling you. It's the honest person that get everything and give everything away. Hmm. And even give what he got. And it's the truth.
Hmm. That's great.
And that's the God living truth. And I'm asking you all, the Braves that I played here was loved by the fans, and I know if we reach out to the fans, they're going to help Rico Cardi Foundation. And it's make me feel good, because when I was playing, I take shoes, clothes, you know, like one time, and this is the truth, I went downtown here to Freeman, and I was going to the bank. I look across, and I saw two shoes, Cobra and Alligator. And I said, gee, those are beautiful. I walk in with my best friend, and I asked the man, I said, hey, you got more of those shoes? He said, I got all color. And I told him, okay, well, just show me. And once he keeps showing me, I say, okay, I like it. I like it. And it was almost from that place right there, come around, and I'm in the middle. And he's taking on shoes and pants. Yeah, I love them. When he got to about 31, I was in the middle. He says, ain't no way I can put no more shoes. What are you doing? He didn't know I was Rico Cardi. Mm-hmm. Okay? You're going to see what's going to happen now. I said, how much shoes you got? They say, man, it's 31 shoes for you to buy one pair of shoes. You buy like a lady. I say, hey, slow down. I want those shoes. He said, what? I said, I love every one of them that is there. 31 pair of shoes. He didn't know what to do. He says it, like he says afterward, he said, man, this black man come in here and just picking out shoes like a crazy. So I told him, I want every one of them. I took out my checking account. I said, okay, how much it cost? He said, $1,600. Take out my check. $1,600, Rico Cardi. When that man saw my name, he said, wait a minute. You are my ball player and my family's ball player. And he called up all his family. His daddy came over and said, hey, give him all of those shoes that is there. And he give you a check. You can tear it up. His father took the check, tear it up. And I said to the fellow there, he was running, I said, hey, I can't do that. No, I got to pay you something. He says, how about $100? I said, no, it's too much shoes for $100. So my friend that is walking with me, my best friend, he says, Rico, give them $300. They want to give you the shoes. I say, okay, I'll give them $600. I wrote out the check for $600, and he didn't want that $600. So here I am. I'm living at Payton Place. I said, you're going to take my shoes over there? It's a black section. He said, I'll take it any way you tell me. At about 5 o'clock, he said, Rico, you at home? I said, no, my family is home. You can take it there. And he took the 31 pair of shoes there. But then people went berserk. I think it's 120 of his family came in maybe a second. I don't know where they live. But they was there. And they was saying, man, give me an autograph. Rico, yours, my player. You know, it make me feel good.
Yeah,
you know?
That's great.
That's awesome.
Well, we appreciate you being here today. We're about out of time, and those are great stories. We don't get to hear enough of those, but we certainly we'll get information about your foundation, and if there's some of our fans that want to help contribute, if we can do something with the organization, I'll definitely pass it along. We'd love to help, and it sounds like you're doing great things.
I know. That's why I reach out to you all, because I know the American people, they love to help. The Red Cross is there and so forth. And I know you are going to help Rico Cardi Foundation. But before you all do that, you all can send them behind my back and ask in San Pedro. of our Rico Cardi Foundation, and they will tell you, you wouldn't hear one word bad against Rico Cardi Foundation. All you're going to hear is good things.
We're
going
to get you to lunch, and again, appreciate it, Ricky. Yeah. Good times.
Yeah, absolutely. I could sit here and listen to you tell stories all day, and I do know one thing that I'm sure of after fans hear this. I know that they're going to check out the Rico Cardi Foundation and help
Thank
out
you.
Any yeah. way
Thank
they can.
Thank you very so, much, right. and I know that's why I asked Greg. I said, Greg, will you present me to the fans? It's been so long. Mm. But all these fans that is out there, these young.
Yeah, we got a whole new group of fans. Mm-hmm.
But the father, the uncles, the aunts, they all knows who was Rico Cardi. In ball players too, because most of the ball players love me. You see, it's only a couple. Like fans says, you know, through 64 through 70, the ball players and the manager used to pick for the All-Star. And that's why they never picked me.
And
then that,
the right
that year of 1970, the fans, them, they give it to the fans are writing. And from then on, the fans start writing on.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And you know who was the three outfielders that year? Hank Aaron, Willie Mays, Enrico Cardi over Roberto Clemente. Listen careful. Roberto Clemente was the fourth outfielder. Now, you wow. know how great I were. And that I was telling you, how in the world, in that wall, you can put up Rafa Ramirez, with the big guns them should be. I should be close to Hank Aaron.
Well, I told you, we just spread them out. And
not Ramirez.
No we have a bunch of different alumni.
You know who is Ramirez? Yeah. You take the big guns and put the big guns them together.
Hell, we got to spread it out. We don't want anybody to sit in one spot. Yeah, we spread it out. All right, Rico, we appreciate you, buddy.
Mike.
All right,
thank
man.
So it was Rico. Nice talking to you.
You too,
nice
buddy.
Meeting you.
Yeah, great to meet you, too.
And Rick. Yeah. And Greg, thank you all very much for this moment.
Thank you so much, Rico.
And it's, you know, it's sad. It's very sad to know that my son is gone. But that's part of life. Mm-hmm. And I have to accept it. Way down deep, you know, you cannot forget it. But I ask God that I'm not mad with him. It's happened. I have to accept it. And I hope that every person that is out there that is listening to me will take that same attitude. We cannot be offended but by God's works. And thank you all very much. And the fans, them, thank them for accepting me and loving me as a ball player and a human being. God bless you all. Thank you.
Thank you. Hey, Braves Country, we just wanted to remind you to rate, review, and subscribe Behind the Braves on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, or at braves.com/behindthebraves, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you, and we'll see you next time on Behind the Braves.